You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to The Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Archaeology Show, episode 295.
On today's show, we talk about recent, quote unquote, world's oldest headlines in the news.
Let's dig a little deeper. Don't forget to check those sources. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Just as a reminder, if you're listening to this in real time, and it's not 38 years from now and the world has ended, and you found this down in the fallout shelter.
Real time up to the date of February 22nd, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully right before that.
Yeah, right before that.
Yes. So we are doing a live show. If it's on our Discord, and I don't know, are we linking to that in the show notes finally?
Yeah, it's in the show.
Okay,
I did last week for sure.
Yeah,
and it will be again this week for sure.
So hopefully, I think
it needs to be in there permanently
every week.
Yeah,
part of our links.
Yeah, I just need to get into our templates behind the scenes. Need to get it in the template. We'll do that.
10 a.m. Mountain Time, noon Eastern Time here in the United States, and figure out what that is for you. The GMT time is listed on the little poster for Instagram that our fantastic social media person Tilly put up.
Yep.
And but yeah, we're doing it live on Discord, so you'll be able to ask questions and things like that through the chat on there. Now, if you don't know what Discord is, it's a free app, social media, social space type of thing that you can download, and there will be a room on there. And trust me, don't try to do this 2 minutes before we go live. Jump in there. It's free.
Just join us.
Navigate around. Yeah. Ask some people, hey, how is this live thing going to work? Yeah. And they will be glad to help you.
Yeah, it's a super welcoming community. People who just like to talk about archaeology. It's not just our show. All the shows on the APN.
Yeah.
So it's a good place to just like have nerdy conversations. It's super fun.
And you don't need to be a member of the APN to join this community either. It's totally free. So
yeah. And that's where we're running the show. But simultaneously, we're going to have a bunch of our RVing friends on the beach who will physically be there with us.
So
it's going to be like this like worlds collide of like physical friends on the beach in Mexico and our virtual friends on Discord. It's going to be really fun. It might be chaotic. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's going to be fun.
Honestly, it might be difficult for us to manage the online community
with
so much in person happening. So
we'll make it work. It's going to be great.
Yeah. It should be good. It should be fun.
And the topic is, since we are in Mexico, want to, you know, respect the culture that we are currently participating in and that we super love because we come here every year and we talk about Mexico a fair bit because we've been to a lot of different places in Mexico at this point. So we don't have it fully nailed down yet, but just expect some prehistory of Mexico type of topic.
Spoiler alert. It's not all tacos.
It is not all tacos. I'm sure we will talk about tacos because, you know,
Mexico, the history of the taco.
So this is an archaeology podcast and I don't know what the archaeology of tacos. Oh, is there archaeology of tacos?
Well, it started somewhere. Somebody took a flat thing and folded it one time and said, this is easier to eat.
Maybe we will have to do a little research on that. It's going to be fun.
Some Mexican in the past, if tacos really did start here, some old abuela was like, here, I've made this thing and put a bunch of food on it and gave it to their son or daughter and was like, here, eat this. And it was like, oh, it fell all over the place. And it's like, why don't I just fold this? And the taco was born. So
cool. Well, I'm sure it happened exactly like that, but we'll go see what the archaeology evidence says, if there is any.
So it was written.
Oh, man. Yeah, all it's right. going to be fun.
Well, for this episode, I tried to theme out, and I'm going to go ahead and call this
a
win.
Yeah, you did it.
Because we actually technically only have two articles for this one that we're really fully going to talk about.
Yeah.
We got
the third segment is
More of a PSA.
Fail article.
Yes, exactly. But that's kind of the point, right?
That is something to be aware of. So we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that when we get there. So the actual two articles we're going to talk about have the word oldest in them.
Yes.
And I hate it when they use these sort of terms in articles because it really just gets you to click on it, which is exactly what it got me to do.
It is clickbait. It is.
Yeah. But this first one, I've actually been thinking about all week since I took the notes on this thing. And it is kind of big news if it's real. Mm-hmm. If it's, well, it is real, but it's kind of big news if it has the implications they say it has. I'm not sure it has quite the implications they say it has, but we'll see.
Didn't see that it had been like peer reviewed published yet. So this is more of a breaking news kind of an announcement, which I think are just as cool as official, you know, published research too. Well, so,
and of course, who would break the news about Canada and the prehistory of North America but the Miami Herald? So
why do we have so many Miami Herald articles?
I think Idaho Statesman must have been purchased.
They got replaced. We haven't had an Idaho Statesman one in so long. So
come on, Idaho Statesman, pick it up.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. So. It's like these outlets, they get onto like a roll where they're doing certain article types, and that's, they're doing a lot of archaeology lately. So anyway,
this is called 11,000-year-old indigenous site, one of oldest on continent, found in Canada. So
see it. What?
I know this says see it.
See it.
Yeah.
Newspaper article titles are just so weird sometimes, but
Well, the funny thing is if you click into the article, you can't actually see it. No. Like they only have one picture in the article, and it's of
Bunch of bones.
Yeah.
So, it is super weird, but.
Yeah. Well, I guess, the top picture is on there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well. Which it's just a picture of like land.
Yeah.
That picture doesn't really tell me much personally, but.
It doesn't really.
Yeah.
So anyway, this site was found by an amateur archaeologist, David Arundu. Mm-hmm. And I just left myself a little note here when I was taking the notes, and I was like, you know, this one good plug for amateur archaeologists, because this was found in North Central Canada.
Yeah.
If you look up Prince Albert, there's the name of a town.
Yeah.
There's actually a Prince Albert National Park as well. And this is north of the Saskatchewan River.
It's like way up there.
This is up in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, some people live there, but
yes,
it's up in the middle of nowhere. And it's like, if it wasn't for people like this amateur archaeologist that was up just like looking
poking around. Yeah.
Who else would have seen this, really?
Well, and he describes himself as researcher and amateur archaeologist, or the article describes him that way. So I don't really know what he's a researcher
The article may not have known what they were talking about.
Well, that's true. But
yeah, because to them, an amateur archaeologist might be a researcher.
Yeah.
So,
but either way, he saw erosion on the riverbank and decided to take a closer look because, you know, erosion is a good place to find things, be them people things or fossil things or whatever.
Right.
So he took a closer look and saw artifacts sticking out of the soil.
Yeah. So he did some digging, so to speak. And
you gotta verify what you're found.
You gotta verify.
I get that. Yeah.
Yep. He notified local university, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then he was quoted in this article as saying, "Now that the evidence has proven my first instincts, this site is shaking up everything we thought we knew of and could change the narrative of early indigenous civilizations of North America."
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
So, and there could be some truth to that.
There could be, for
we'll
sure.
talk about it. So.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about what this is. The artifacts were identified by members of the Sturgeon Lake First Nation as belonging to a larger indigenous settlement dating back 11,000 years. And that is 1,000 years earlier than previously thought for settlement in this area.
Yeah. Now, when they say settlement, that's what really the clincher is here, because hunting camps and people passing through and things like that would be more common for this time period. Settlement is actually pretty impressive for 10,000 years ago, let alone 11,000.
Yeah.
But 10,000 years ago is when, yes, settlement, you know, settlements have been found, right? Is what they're saying. But pushing that back 1,000 years is a long time.
That is a lot in the archaeological record, for sure.
Yeah.
And the stuff they found are stone tools, fire pits, and tool making materials. Everything you would expect to see in a place that is just like more of a long term settlement.
Yeah.
And not just like this temporary camp, a place that they were hunting, something that was just a stopover point rather than a, like, you know, settlement.
Right.
A settlement. That's why this is important and different.
Yeah. They found in the fire pits some charcoal and large bison remains. Which did confirm some oral histories of bison use from indigenous peoples
only
in the area.
Makes sense for that.
Yeah.
That this is technically still like Great Plains area, right?
I mean, it's definitely plains.
Yeah.
It's not really the Great. I guess it's an extension of the Great Plains.
I think
if you were to bring it up.
Yeah, I think it is. From listening to Carlton Shield Chief Gover has a show called the Great Plains Podcast, Great Plains Archaeology Podcast.
Great Plains Anthropology Podcast. Do you know what our shows are?
You know, it's so funny you say that, but like, I know what the icons look like for all of them. And I'm so used to looking at them visually that like, I don't always pay super close attention to the name. That's well, really terrible.
And I think in our back end stuff, we just call it Great Plains.
We just call it Plains half the time. Yeah, but yeah, anyway, he does this podcast called Great Plains Podcast. We're just leaving it at that. We'll link to it in the show notes. Carlton, I'm so sorry if you listen to this. But his show is super great. And it's all about this giant section of the middle North American continent, basically, yeah, and how it was settled. He does some pre-stuff and some you know, later stuff and all kinds of things. So it's a great show to go listen to. And I think I've heard him talk about Saskatchewan in his show before. So I think this counts as Great Plains. So. I don't even know why I was going there with that. But well. now we've done it.
The speaking of universities,
were we?
Yes.
Okay.
Carlton. The University of Saskatchewan was contacted for this. They helped do some of the studies, and they confirmed that it is one of the oldest known Indigenous sites on the continent. Mm-hmm. And it does confirm also that highly organized societies existed here earlier than previously thought. Again, over 1,000 years earlier.
Yeah.
And here's where I was like, because they also... This guy, Glenn Stewart from the university.
Oh.
And I think the David from the was also kind of saying this, but who actually was quoted as saying this? Let me go back and look here. The quotes are done very strangely in the article here, but I think this was actually Glenn Stewart from the university saying this. He said that this antiquity of it, right, and the uniqueness of it, places this site among the most recognized ancient sites in the world, like the Great Pyramids of Egypt.
Big words.
Stonehenge in England. Mm-hmm. Göbekli Tepe in Turkey. Now, I'm not saying just because it doesn't have monumental architecture like these sites do, that it can't be placed amongst the important sites of the world, right? But, I mean, they really did pick some
iconic sites that were occupied for thousands of years in most cases by many groups of people, and they built on them. And so those are big words for a site that has been fairly recently discovered, and they don't really know the full extent of it yet. And that there isn't any monumental architecture at. Now, granted, these people didn't really do that, which is fine. So,
but they'd have to build like a huge structure over this thing, preserve it, which the natives are talking about. First peoples, actually. That's what they're called in Canada. First Nation people. But they are, yes, important. Yes. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's a little early days to be placing it in that group, I think.
Yeah. Well, not even for that reason, too, because we are filling in the picture of the peopling of the Americas, like yearly, right? New sites are discovered, new stuff is coming to light. And so I feel like the picture is very incomplete right now. So without that complete picture, it's really hard to say which sites were the most important into the development of people in this part of the world. Now, granted, I don't know when you get to the point where you have enough sites that you can say, okay, well, this is the important one. So like, at a certain point, you kind of just have to be like, well, these are the important ones because this is what we have right now and what we know. So it's this, this, and this or whatever. But yeah, that is an interesting statement to make. It is very, very important, though. For me, I'm just like, yep. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Put it right in there. We already know that people were here further back in time than previously thought. And let's keep looking. Keep looking, keep finding things. These sites that are eroding into rivers are really cool because you get that like profile, you know, into the deeper layers. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
Well, before this site was discovered, this time period was thought to contain nomadic people, as we had mentioned. People with a more sedentary lifestyle, according to these researchers, would also mean an idea of land stewardship and what they call deep-rooted presence, which does mean that, because if you're going to be staying in a place for a longer period of time, you have to know some things about that land, where to find food.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not moving around and following either the growth of, you know, the harvesting of certain plants and animals,
migration of animals,
migration patterns, things like that kind of stuff, then you've got to know things about where you're living.
You have to have that knowledge, which means you have to live there for a while to gain that knowledge.
Yeah, they also raised questions about the Bering Strait theory as well, stating that people must have lived here for countless generations in order to develop this knowledge of the land, mm-hmm. this deep-rooted knowledge of the land, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, the Bering Strait theory is large wave of people crossed from Siberia to Alaska via a land bridge about 13,000 years ago to populate North America, quote, for the first time, mm-hmm. right? That's kind of the big theory there.
Yeah.
It's getting more and more likely that, yes, that happened, but it wasn't the only time, and it might not even have been the first time.
Yeah.
But like, a lot of people did come over via that, but yeah. when they got here, there were probably people here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how did they get here? How did those other people get here? But oral histories in the U.S. and Canada refute the Bering Strait theory, but that's...
As being the only
method.
Path or only yeah. method.
Or yeah. even the historical accuracy of it at yeah. all. So
it's just, when you have dates that are older, mm-hmm. it's really hard to, like, refute that. So somehow yeah. we get older dates of people yeah. being present. So like, something else is going on that we don't know.
Well, the other interesting thing too is, if oral histories are starting to get more and more proven true, there's oral histories in what's now known as Saskatchewan that are well known that put Saskatchewan as a center for cultural exchange and trade, but that was never backed up with evidence until, well, they're saying now yeah. this backs that up. So I'm not sure how that one site backs this up, but at least that says people were here and here for a long time mm-hmm. versus just wandering across the tundra. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
It's still is so interesting to me, because when you talk about a large group of people living together in a place for a long time, they weren't building the stone structures that you see at Stonehenge and other places like that. Yeah. But they had to have been building structures of some sort.
Well, at least temporary ones they could live in.
Yeah.
But just not stuff that lives through the years.
That doesn't last. So yeah. there could have been really elaborate wooden structures there, or made out of other materials that decompose away. So I would love to start figuring out how to find evidence of that kind of mm-hmm. thing. Or maybe they already have it in this article. It's just not really covering it very well. Maybe there's post holes here or whatever, and they just aren't talking about it. But that's what I would want to. I want to know more about how these people lived, more than just fire pits and stone tools, you know?
Well, we may not know how they lived, but we know how they walked. These sandals are made for walking.
Oh, God.
We'll talk about those on the other side of the break. Welcome back to the Archaeology Show, episode 295, and now we're moving over to Oregon, and yeah, two stories in North America. Mm-hmm. Normally we're all over the place.
But yeah, usually, yeah. but so, then it just worked out this way.
I know. Yeah. So I didn't even try to do that. I was just looking for something with the word oldest in it. So, but anyway, this one here is kind of interesting in their use of the word oldest, but anyway, it's talking about sandals, shoes, basically, found in southern Oregon mm-hmm. that are the oldest identifiable piece of clothing, mm-hmm. right? They're at least older than the volcanic eruption of 7,700 years ago that created Crater Lake. And I like that "at least older than" comment, because working in the Great Basin, we actually, in some cases, would find the Mazama ash layer.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And that is that, eruption, that eruption that yeah. created Crater Lake. That was mm-hmm. Mount Mazama. Yeah. So when you find that ash layer and it's identifiable, mm-hmm. you know that stuff underneath that has to be older,
because
that ash was laid
yeah.
down on top of it.
So yeah. like, that was their base thing, that they're like, okay, we know they're older than this, but then they did do more dating, right?
They actually dated the sandals. I don't even yeah. know why that comment was thrown in here.
Yeah.
It was just like something to mention Crater Lake. Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
So
they weren't found near there, because, you know, southern Oregon.
Yeah, well, they were found in Paisley Caves, actually, near Paisley Caves, which is southeastern Oregon. I guess Crater Lake is close to
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a little more venturing into the northern mm-hmm. Great Basin, so.
Yeah.
But they're on display currently at the University of Oregon Museum of Natural and Cultural History, which is in Eugene, Oregon, which mm-hmm. I'm thinking,
oh, we need to go there.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, we're totally. Going to kind of either pass right by there or be near there when yeah. we're at my parents' house. Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
So,
yeah, your parents live like an hour from there, basically, right?
Pretty close. Yeah, yeah. A little more. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Fort Rock sandals, they're called, were radiocarbon dated to 10,400 years ago.
That's quite a bit more than 77,000 years old. So.
Well, that wouldn't be more than 77,000 years old. 7,700. 77,000-year-old sandals would be something.
1,700, whatever.
The thing is, I bet they were wearing something 77,000 years ago.
Probably.
Especially in like Northern maybe. Europe. You got to keep your feet warm. They wrapped them at least.
Baby.
Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah.
This suggests, like the last article, substantial occupation and adaptation. Mm-hmm. And these were basically wintertime sandals that they found.
They're sandals, though, really? This would be the wintertime foot coverage?
You're thinking of sandals in the way you're thinking of sandals.
Yeah. But all
shoes were sandals back then.
Okay.
They didn't have, like, oh, I'm going to grab my winter boots and now I'm going to grab my summer shoes. No, all shoes were sandals. But they said these were basically wintertime sandals because of the way that they're completely wrapping around your foot.
Okay.
And I guess they may have found evidence that they were insulated in some way.
Okay.
But all footwear, when you hear from those that kind of time period, they basically call them sandals. That's just the style.
Okay.
But they're not open.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but these sandals weren't durable. They were easily torn up and worn through, according to archaeologists. They were basically just for going into cold water marshes and lakes for duck hunting, harvesting, things like that. Mm. So just trying to keep your feet as warm as possible. But imagine they didn't do a super great job.
Yeah, I'm just like, these don't sound amazing. I'm like, how are we sure these are for the winter? But okay, that's fine.
Because I think they found summertime sandals.
Yeah, I guess they must have.
They found sandals that were more, you know, less covering, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So the areas of Southeast Oregon, Northwest Nevada, and Northeast California are known as the Northern Great Basin. And they have found similar sandals throughout this area.
Yeah.
That's areas that we've worked in quite a bit. Never found a sandal, though, unfortunately.
Well, the reason for that is because these are mostly found in dry cave environments.
Right.
And we've never excavated a cave.
That's
most
true.
Because most of the caves that have been located out there have been excavated, I would say. Mm-hmm. I would say there's probably very few caves that have been not only not found, but not excavated.
Well, that's not necessarily true. Like, that we were working on in the Elko area had a couple rock shelters on it that had not been excavated, but they were not planning to excavate them. It was more of a preservation situation where it was like, nobody's here, nobody's going here, just keep them preserved and unexcavated, and that's fine. So, yeah.
That dry environment, though, is what allows organic fibers to survive.
Yeah.
And you might be thinking, well, I've heard of you guys talk about, like, wet environments allowing things to survive, like in Northern Europe and stuff like that, like peat bogs.
Yeah, yeah.
But peat bogs allow things to survive for a different reason, and that's because of a lack of oxygen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, because really, you need something that basically kills the bacteria that allows decay.
Mm-hmm.
One of those things is dryness, and the other one is not being able to breathe.
It's no oxygen. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but these are the traditional homelands of the Klamath, Modoc, and some bands of the Northern Paiute peoples.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and some of the oldest pieces of corded fibers come from Paisley Caves, which is near where these sandals were found. And they date to 12,700 years ago, which is very, very long ago. Older textiles than the sandal have been found, but what is unique about this is that it's identifiable. And this is where that, like, oldest distinction comes in. There's tons of textiles that have been found around the world that are older than this. We've probably talked about some of them because my ears always perk up when I see anything with textiles. But the thing is that we almost never know what that piece of textile was for. Even in great preservation circumstances, you don't usually have the entire garment or the entire thing.
Yeah.
So this is unique in that they know for sure that it's a shoe. And when you look at the picture, regardless of how you feel about when they were wearing it and why they were wearing it, it's definitely, definitely a shoe. So that's cool.
Yeah. So they also found, in the same area, little bone needles that they think were used for making clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A bunch of other stuff as well, but just in the textile area.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that. That's cool.
Yeah, couple that with the picture they're painting with other finds regarding what people ate, and a more developed picture is just forming through time of what people are doing at these time periods, which is pretty cool. So
yeah, it's really neat.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to come back on the other side, and we were going to talk about an article until we started looking into it, but instead we are going to have a cautionary tale for all of you. So back with that on the other side. Welcome back to episode 295 of the Archaeology Show. And tell us about the article you found to talk about. So I told Rachel, yeah, we need another article.
Yeah.
And I want something with the word oldest in it.
Yeah. So I was searching under those parameters. And when you restrict yourself like that, and you're also looking at archaeology stories, like sometimes like weird stuff pops up.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say this one was weird. The article title grabbed me. It's World's Oldest Pyramid, built 25,000 years ago, was not made by humans, archaeologists claim.
Yeah.
All of that is true and fair.
Yeah. So this article was published on February 13th, 2025. Mm-hmm. But when you started to look through this thing, and what was your first clue that something was off on this?
Well, the first clue was they're talking about the Gunung Padang Pyramid in Indonesia. And that piqued my interest immediately because I'm like, oh, Gunung Padang. We've talked about it before. This is a Graham Hancock data point, something that he always goes to when he's talking about his ancient humans theory. Mm-hmm. You can go listen to our other podcast about it. There's like a ton of them at this point to hear what his ridiculous theories are. And what this article is saying, basically, is that archaeologists disagree that the Gunung Padang was constructed by humans.
Yeah.
And that's true.
Sure.
We talked about it in our episode, and there's been a lot of published stuff about it, right? Yeah. So I was like, oh, there must be new research or something. Cool. Like, let's look into it and see like how much more new research we have about how this is not true. And so I started reading through it, and I'm like, okay, so the lead researcher is a guy, Danny Hillman Natawijaya, of the Indonesian Institute of Sciences. Again, we've talked about him. He was in the ancient Apocalypse show, and we talked about him on our episode. He is, you know, trying to do real archaeology, and he's publishing things that are using archaeological methods, but basically coming to conclusions that are not supported by his research. Mm-hmm. And that would be that this Gunung Padang is a man-made pyramid when it's not. It's just a hill with some cool like lava flow stuff going on. And it's talking about his research and what he says it is. And then it's got some more quotes about from other archaeologists, including Flint Dibble, who we had an interview with on this show, about how there's actually no evidence for that. All great. All this has happened. And I'm reading through this and I'm like, none of this is new. None of this is new information. We have talked about this. You and I rehashed this many times. Tristan interviewed Flint Dibble, and I think they talked about it on that show. They might not have specifically talked about this, but, you know, it's been around. We've talked about this. So I'm like, why is this coming up again? What's the new research? And I told you that there was a link to the original article that was published by Danny in Archaeological Perspection. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, the article's been retracted. Okay, that must be why.
Yeah.
The article was retracted because it's not good science. It's not good archaeology. So that must be why this article is talking about it. And you were like, we'll go find out when it was retracted. So I did. It was retracted almost a year ago.
Yeah.
Last March it was retracted. So the only conclusion I could come to is that some journalists for Indy 100, like, let's be honest, that's not your greatest news source for archaeology to begin with. I only got here because of my restricted parameters that I was searching for. And then I'm like, these journalists are just rehashing old drama from a year ago and repackaging it to make it seem like this is new information, a new study, a new something. And it is absolutely not. It's clickbait. This article is the epitome of clickbait. And then I got annoyed, and then I complained to you about it, and then we decided to talk about it. So that's where we're at.
Yeah. So when you click through to Archaeological Perspection, the retraction was published, like you said, on March 18th, 2024.
Yeah.
And you can read the retraction.
Yep.
And I just want to read part of it here because they say the article was originally published on 20 October 2023 and has been retracted by agreement between the journal editors in chief, and they list their names here. Following publication of the article, concerns were raised by third parties with expertise in geophysics, archaeology, and radiocarbon dating about the conclusions drawn by the authors based on the evidence reported. Mm-hmm. The publisher and the co-editors-in-chief have investigated these concerns and have concluded that the article contains a major error. The error which was not identified during peer review, is that the radiocarbon dating was applied to soil samples that were not associated with any artifacts or features that could be reliably interpreted as anthropogenic or, quote, man-made.
Right.
Therefore, the interpretation that the site is an ancient pyramid built 9,000 or more years ago is incorrect, and the article must be retracted.
Yeah. How that got through peer review...
Yeah.
Is shocking.
And Mr. Danny responded on behalf of all the authors, all of whom disagree with the retraction.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's shocking. And the crazy thing about all of this is not that this was retracted a year ago, not that this was originally published 2 years ago, but that we found a news article published this week.
This week.
Now, sure, the news article was actually something, sure, you would read and... find some favorable information on, because they are saying that, yeah, this is all kind of BS.
Yeah.
Because, great. But this easily could have gone the other way.
It easily could have.
Yeah.
They could have not found this retraction and just regurgitated some news source from a year ago before the retraction and said that this is the oldest pyramid from 25,000 years ago.
I'm like,
and
why was this even published?
Why was it even done? It just... I don't know. And this is like the kind of stuff that you have to be careful of when you're looking at probably any science. Our experience is, of course, with archaeology, but any scientific article that's making a big claim, you really have to go to the original news source to see when it was published, who published it, why are they talking about it now? Is it just clickbait and they're trying to drum up some old scientific drama from a year ago, which is clearly what this article is doing? They probably published something maybe last year and got a whole bunch of hits on it. And they're like, hey, you think we can do that again? Let's try it and see, you know? And again, I'm not that mad because the conclusions that they draw do fall on the side of the archaeologists. But it's just like the more we talk about this stuff, the more it stays in like the pop culture like world, and we have to keep talking about it. We have to keep refuting it. And I kind of wish stuff like this would just die, you know?
And the thing is, who started this chain reaction too? Because when you start clicking on some of the other links, like there's one link in there that says that Flint Dibble from Cardiff University and then link told the journal Nature on link that there's no clear evidence to suggest the buried layers were built by humans. Well, when you click that actual link, it takes you to an actual article in Scientific American that was published, and we're looking at this on Apple News, and it doesn't have a date on this Scientific American article, but at the bottom of the Scientific American article, it says, this article was reproduced with permission and was first published on November 28th, 2023. So Scientific American republished this from Nature. Who knows when? Maybe they're the ones that started it. Maybe this came out just a few weeks ago. Somebody else picked it up and they're reporting it as new news. You know, so who started this cycle of regurgitation that other people are just picking up on and now just quoting back all these sources? And you can just click through, because you get all the way back to the Nature article that from November 28th, 2023. Where they're talking about this controversial claim before the article retraction, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Scientific American article was November 28th, 2023 as well. So in this case, it does not seem like any of the major news sources were contributing to the like digging up of this nonsense again. But the article that we found was front and center on Apple News. So if you're just scrolling through to take in your news for the day, it's like front and center in my, I have a search for archaeology set up, and it's from Indy 100, which, you know, you do see that immediately. So you can scroll right on by a news source like that if you're just not interested in trying to vet whether or not it's true. But yeah, I don't know. I just, these clickbait, you know, just trying to like drum up drama, journalistic websites are just very frustrating to me.
Yeah.
And so we're not, for that reason, going to link to this article at all in the show notes today.
Yeah.
There's no need to revisit this. I don't know why they had to.
Well, the thing is, if, I mean, read articles, read what you want.
That's true. Yeah.
But take a look at A, when the article was published, and then B, take a look maybe down at the bottom, see if this was a republishing of something from the past, and just take things with a little bit of a grain of salt, right? Like, you don't know if somebody, like these outlets, especially if you're reading something that's not from, say, a scientific news outlet.
Right.
Not that they're not going to maybe do the same thing, but some of these other outlets, like the Miami Herald, like this Indy 100, like those other places that just need clicks every single day, and they might not have something that day. They have people who are, you know, paid by the word and trying to put out articles. Well, they're going to go find something, and their publishers probably could give a crap what it is when it comes to archaeology and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they're going to put something out, and they're going to put this tiny little phrase that says this article was first published, blah, blah, blah. And that clears them of all wrongdoing.
Yeah.
So be careful when you're reading stuff.
It's so tricky, though, because, like, technically, there is no wrongdoing here.
Technically, there's not.
Technically, everything that is in this article is fine.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, like, why bring it up now? Why keep going back to this old conversation that was dead and buried a year ago? It's for clicks, and it's for the drama that comes with this kind of a topic. We're feeding into it right now by talking about it, aren't we? That's why we're not going to link to the article.
Yeah.
But anyway, just check your news sources. That's all we have to say from our experience in looking for archaeology articles, is when you see a news source that you wouldn't normally associate with archaeology or with science, it doesn't mean that they're not doing good work, but just double check.
Yeah.
You know, when they provide you with links, which these guys did, which is really great, just check those links and make sure that you're cool with whatever they're saying.
And by the way, we actually cut something out of this, the first part of this, because we usually click on a link. We click on our links when we look at stuff when we're talking about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't yet clicked on this article today. Rachel already had it up.
Yeah.
And a different date showed up for me.
Yeah.
And I just actually went to the Indy100.com website and just tried to find this article without clicking on the link.
Mm-hmm.
And now it says 16 seconds ago it was published. So there's no date. It's literally coming up as when you click on it. That's the time that it's showing this article as coming up.
That's crazy.
It's the weirdest thing.
It feels really janky.
Yeah. It's like, when did they actually publish this article? There's actually no way to know.
Yeah.
It just says this article was first published on the 11th of December, 2023.
Yeah.
So
they're just regurgitating old news.
Yeah. But you don't know how old. You don't even know when they published this article. It's just now showing up in our feed.
Yeah.
But I don't know when it first came out. When did they first put it out?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's crazy. So
it is a very interesting system. Just they're always trying to get you to click on stuff. So, you know, bear that in mind.
There's a little email symbol here for Mr. Liam Odell, the author of this article. Somebody email him and say, why did you publish this? I mean, just why'd you publish it now?
He probably sold the article and it's gone from his hands at that point.
This is his email and he sold it. I'm just wondering, why did this come out now? What was the impetus for this coming out from something that's 2 years old? You know, why now? Why did this come out today or this week or this last couple of weeks? I'm just curious. I might actually do that. So, and they still have a little Twitter icon too. They need to fix that.
Anyway. So that's our journey in finding articles and our cautionary tale, I suppose you could say, of what to look for and what not to look for, what to avoid.
Yeah.
A little bit. We try to do this for our show so that we're not sharing stories to everybody that we don't support. But this one was particularly annoying, so we wanted to tell the story of what happened.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
So we mentioned an episode or two ago that I was going to have an interview, and I ended up having to get that rescheduled because I was sick. So it's gotten rescheduled, and I'm going to be doing that this week. So that's more than likely going to be the next episode coming out. If you want to hear the live show that we're doing, either show up live or, if I can ever find the time to do this, because we have some other bonus content that has to come out, but the bonus content is only available for members, and our live shows go up on the bonus site on the APN, arcpodnet.com. Well, you can become a member at /members, but there is a page on there for member access only where you can get all access to our previous bonus content. So that's where it'll be. If you want to join live, it's always free. But if you want to get access to it because you didn't get to see it, you have to become a member. And you can do that for $7.99 a month US, or I think it's $76 a year if you want to save 25%.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to be like our latest member, Catherine, who I'll call out.
Superstar.
She is the first one, because I kind of put this together because somebody said, why don't you have a big membership? And nobody's ever actually done it because we've never promoted it or anything. But there's an APN superstar level at $200 US a year. And she actually joined at that level. I hope it wasn't a mistake. Sorry, Catherine,
well,
if it was.
We appreciate it. It's basically a donation to help us keep it keep all things these, running. So.
All these things are a donation.
Yeah.
So it helps. Everything helps keep the lights on.
Mm-hmm.
So I just paid the renewal fees for our hosting fees and all that stuff. And our social media costs money.
It's not free.
All of it costs money. So this helps tremendously. So, all right, everybody. Thanks a lot. And hopefully we'll see you on the live episode. If not, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.arcpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ArcPodNet. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.